Ladies and gentlemen, you are now listening to the Fantasy Baseball Hour with Al Melchior.
Welcome, everybody. This is the Fantasy Baseball Hour. I'm your host, Al Melchior. Thank you so much for tuning in. And, man, it's been a long, long time because I was off on Labor Day. So haven't put one of these shows out since last Friday. So get you caught up on everything. As far as expanded rosters go, that's something that happened since the last show. And there's really not been that much to talk about. Probably the biggest story in that regard has been that Eloy Jimenez is not going to be called up in September. So that is a major letdown. And it's not just a major letdown because he's one of the top prospects in baseball, because he was having a terrific season, but also because we got signals from none other than the White Sox organization back in August that a call-up was practically imminent for Jimenez. There was a statement made by Chris Getz, who's the director of player development for the White Sox, went on a radio show and said, looked like Jimenez was really close to ready and sort of at least hinted. I don't remember exactly what Chris Getz's words were, but at least intimated that a call-up was imminent. And it wasn't, and it's not. And we will see Eloy Jimenez in 2019, so not being called up. And again, that's kind of old news, but this is the first show since rosters expanded. So the two call-ups we have seen in about the last 24 hours they'd be more interesting, I think, if we could be assured that these players are going to get playing time. Victor Robles called up by the Nationals, and Francisco Mejia getting the call from the Padres. So, you know, neither team, well, certainly the Padres are out of the hunt. The Nationals, yeah, theoretically still in it, but not really contending. And so maybe they work Robles in, but it's hard to see him getting much playing time. The Padres could decide to take away some playing time from Austin Hedges and give Francisco Mejia a shot, but I don't really see it with either. So I'm not making any moves to pick up either player, because frankly, in dynasty leagues, those guys are spoken for. In deeper leagues, those two players are probably owned, although it's probably worth checking in some deeper leagues. But then, you know, if you're talking 12 team, 14 team mixed, I don't expect either of those players to really make an impact. I don't really expect them to make an impact even in 15 or 16 team mixed leagues. So I'm taking a pass, and there's other than in very deep leagues where they may somehow be unowned, I think you can take a pass for now on Victor Robles and Francisco Mejia. Got a bunch of injury news. Danny Duffy's going to be shut down for the season. Had another left shoulder impingement, and had already had, I think, a couple of anti-inflammatory shots. I'm not sure if it was two or what the number was exactly, but basically by the time that he'd have to wait around to getting another one, he wouldn't really be ready to come back in time to really help the Royals this year. So no more Danny Duffy in 2018. Up and down season for him. I mean, he really seemed to hit his stride in midseason before getting hurt again. So maybe somebody that can be a bargain next year. Ned Yost says that he may go with a six-man rotation that could include Eric Skoglund and or and I'm going to admit here, I have I made note to myself that it's Sparkman. It's Glenn Sparkman, who I nearly called George Sparkman. So you can see I'm not too dead to picking up Glenn Sparkman. I'm not really into picking up either pitcher, although the Royals rotation is getting sort of interesting. In fact, right now, as I am taping this show, Royals are playing the Indians, and it's a 1-0 pitcher's duel between Corey Kluber and Brad Keller. And I found Keller to be really interesting earlier in the season. Rule 5 pick, who was really doing well in relief, then got moved into the rotation and continued to do well there with a lot of ground balls and a lot of soft contact. And then those sort of dried up, and then his results weren't as good. But lately, Keller really has been a better and different pitcher, getting more chases, getting more strikeouts. And so far in this one, he's through three innings, just one run, though on five hits, but with three strikeouts. So might take a closer look at Keller in the days to come. Pretty interesting. And then Jake Junis has been terrific lately. I've talked about him on some recent episodes. So, you know, some interesting, at least a couple of interesting arms in the Royals rotation right now. So, anyhow, no more Danny Duffy this year. David Price, who was dealing with a wrist issue after being hit by a comebacker, he is set to go for a start on Friday night against the Astros, according to MLB.com. And also, according to MLB.com, Chris Sale is going to pitch in that home series against the Astros, but as an opener. So that's interesting. I mean, it makes sense, actually, to kind of work him back in gently. So, yeah, for fantasy purposes, no reason to be looking to use Chris Sale this weekend, but hopefully a step on to some better things for him. The Red Sox activated Rafael Devers on Tuesday, and he got into action against the Braves as a pinch hitter, so not starting in that one. Eduardo Nunez got the start at third base, so no signals yet that Rafael Devers is going to get a whole bunch of playing time, but he is back with the Red Sox. And again, these things now take on a sort of different light. Players don't go on the DL that normally would because of the expanded rosters, or players get called up or activated and aren't necessarily going to get much playing time. So not necessarily a major development there for Rafael Devers. A few players that got hurt on Tuesday. Anthony Rizzo had to leave the Cubs game early with a right foot contusion, fouled a ball off of his foot. X-rays did come back negative, so day-to-day for Rizzo, according to MLB.com. And also from MLB.com, Miguel Sano has been diagnosed with a lower left leg bruise. He had to exit early on Tuesday. And Dansby Swanson got hit in the helmet by a pitch and is currently not in the game, did not start for the Braves. They're currently right now in the middle of a game with the Red Sox. And, you know, since this is on demand only, the score doesn't matter. But I'm going to give it to you anyways. It's the top of the sixth. Braves are up 7-1. So not actually a decent start for Hector Velasquez, but the Drew Pomeranz came on in relief, and Braves blew it open against Pomeranz, and a nice start so far for Mike Foltynewicz. So let me just check real quick and see if Swanson has entered this game. We have seen Kurt Suzuki as a pinch hitter, but no Dansby Swanson. So I would imagine he could maybe miss a few days, but no timetable yet for Swanson. Michael Franco, still dealing with a hand issue. He's got some soreness and swelling and has missed some time. He's going to have an MRI possibly today or possibly Thursday, today being Wednesday. That according to NBC Sports Philadelphia. According to MLB.com, Marcus Stroman has developed a blister once again. That was back on his last start on Monday. And his manager, John Gibbons, says that it's clearly affecting him and plans to take a cautious approach. So that not a good time right now to count on Marcus Stroman, but he will be reassessed. And I'm sorry, I think I said that was MLB.com. That's actually from Sportsnet. This, however, from MLB.com, that Kenley Jansen might not travel with the Dodgers to Colorado for their weekend series against the Rockies. Of course, he's been fine. He's his last three outings, he's been really good again. So it doesn't seem like there's any concerns there, not in terms of performance, and there's nothing specifically to be concerned about with Kenley Jansen health-wise. However, you may recall that it was the Dodgers' last trip to Colorado when Kenley Jansen had to be hospitalized with the irregular heartbeat, and he also had a similar issue back in 2012 on a trip to Coors Field. So they just may play cautious and leave him back in L.A., and if so, then I think you're probably looking at maybe Ryan Madsen or Kenta Maeda. Maeda really has not taken very well to the late inning role, so maybe if you're going to speculate in a daily league, maybe you go after Ryan Madsen, although he's not been in his best form either and hasn't really pitched that much since coming off the DL either. So Not a great situation. Probably one you should avoid there this weekend with the Dodgers. Sean Doolittle, he was, based on reports from last week, really expected to be back by now. He's not. He threw a sim game on Sunday. His velocity was down a bit, so Nationals wanted to have Doolittle throw another sim game. That's happening on Wednesday, and I've not seen anything yet about that. I'm not sure if that's taken place already today or if that's going to be later on, but he'll obviously be reevaluated after whenever that sim game happens for Doolittle. So return may not be quite as imminent as was thought just a few days ago. Also, since been on the podcast here, we've had a little bit of closer drama with the Cardinals. Bud Norris on Sunday gave up a couple of home runs and then came back on Monday and gave up, blew a save by giving up a home run to Bryce Harper. So he was made unavailable. I think pitching back-to-back days, that's not all that unusual. But he was basically given the night off by Mike Schilt on Tuesday. And then the Cardinals had to sort of scramble and cobble a plan together. They did wind up having a save situation, although that was in part because Dominic Leone allowed some runs in the ninth inning after having pitched a clean eighth. So in the end, Schilt's original plan to save Jordan Hicks for a save situation, that's what he did, except it was a one-out save instead of a one-inning save for Jordan Hicks. So all of this is a very roundabout way of saying that that situation in St. Louis is really up in the air. It's not clear who's going to get the next save. I mean, it could be Bud Norris. It really could just be a night off for him. But he's not been good lately, and Jordan Hicks has been a little better. And Jordan Hicks was the clear choice there. Schilt went into the game saying that if there's going to be a save situation, it was going to be Hicks. Again, it didn't play out maybe exactly the way that he thought it would, but ultimately Schilt did go to Hicks for the save. So not a bad speculation target right now if Jordan Hicks is available to go out and get him. Even though, again, it's not by any means definitive that there's going to be a change there, a closer in St. Louis. And I just want to point out one other thing, too, in terms of speculating for saves, and this is not really speculating, so maybe that was not the right segue here. But in some shallower formats where closers are on waivers, again, this is probably unlikely, and it's hard to trust ownership rate numbers once you get into September because a lot of leagues are in playoff mode. Owners are not playing anymore, or owners maybe are playing, but they're just, frankly, they're checked out. So it's always a little hard to trust the ownership rate numbers. But nonetheless, let me point out, Jose Leclerc, who over the last 30 days has been the third most valuable and productive reliever in fantasy, according to the ESPN player rater. So in terms of their measure of roto value, the only people who have been ahead of Leclerc over the last 30 days, which is just shy of the period when he started to close for the Rangers after they traded Kayla, over the last 30 days, only Edwin Diaz and Blake Treinen have more roto value. And those guys have been consistently outstanding all year. They've really been the only ones who have been automatic consistently. And over at least the last 30 days, I understand, much smaller sample, smaller time frame. But over the last 30 days, Leclerc is right there with those two. And he is far from universally owned. Jose Leclerc on ESPN. ESPN, typically you would expect more so there than on CBS or Fantrax, smaller leagues, where closers may actually be available. Leclerc is 64% owned in ESPN leagues. So, again, I realize that a certain number of that 36% of leagues where Leclerc is available, that it just may be, a situation where owners are checked out and the teams that are still playing are set with their closers. But it's worth checking into. And on CBS, which tends to have higher ownership rates, Leclerc is still 29% available in CBS leagues. So, again, a certain amount of it is probably owners that are not really either playing or paying attention. But, it, you know, it may just legitimately be that he's available in your league. So do check that out. He has been outstanding. He's been elite since becoming the Rangers closer. So we do not have elite weather for baseball in a couple of locations tonight. So as I mentioned, we got a couple of day games going on, but we also have a number of games on the nighttime slate, and two of them pose a potential problem. And I feel so bad for Michael Kopech because it just seems like the rain follows him wherever he goes. White Sox are hosting the Tigers tonight, and there's an 84% chance of precipitation for first pitch. That's a very high chance. And it does go down, but only really down to around 50%. So that doesn't look like a great spot to be relying on either Michael Kopech or Jordan Zimmermann. And again, it's frustrating because Kopech's pitched well, but he's had a couple of shortened starts already. So something to be aware of. And then also Coors Field, that's going to be Giants and Rockies. And for that one, only a 15% chance of precipitation at game time, but that's coming down from a higher probability an hour or two before. So that's going to be one to watch as well. And that's that one, in terms of the pitching matchup, is a little less likely to impact you. It's Andrew Suarez and Antonio Senzatella. But still, if you're considering either those pitchers or, you know, any player in the lineups for those games, that's one where you do have to check back in on the weather before lineups lock this evening. And just a little bit of news that I see coming across my Twitter feed as I'm talking here, that Colton Wong has been activated. So good news for the Cardinals, good news for Wong, but that's been a little bit of a tough situation for the Cardinals. Been a little shorthanded in the infield, and now they have Colton Wong back. So very, very good news there. All right. Well, again, I've been gone from the show for 5 days. So I'm certainly not going to go back. There's a lot of, you know, news that's old news. Heck, rotations have, you know, made a full turnaround since the last time I was on the air here. But I do want to take a look back at some of the standout performances from Tuesday's games. And I want to start with a couple of pitchers because these are pitchers who have rebounded recently, or at least appear to be rebounding, who had lost the faith of a good number of owners. And the first one is really the one that I think probably more people are going to be interested in. That's Robbie Ray. And he had a very nice start on Tuesday. However, it was against the Padres. So this is just the perennial dilemma that we have with a pitcher who's been inconsistent or maybe just flat out slumping. And then they bounce back and it's against the Padres. And you have to wonder, well, is this a matchup against a team that's not that scary, that's boosting the numbers, or is this legitimate, legitimate rebound? And so, first of all, the numbers for Ray against the Padres on Tuesday, 6 1/3 scoreless innings, only 2 hits, only 2 walks, and 10 Ks, and 21 swings and misses. That's great to see. But the number I zeroed in on was one different from those. It was Ray's chase rate in the start. So the percentage of pitches outside of the strike zone that Ray threw that induced a swing, regardless of whether it was a you know, contact was made or not. And in this start against the Padres, Robbie Ray had a 34% chase rate, which is good. It's not you know, good or above average to the degree where, you know, with another pitcher, you would say, wow, this is really incredible. But if you look at the game log for Ray over his, I'm going to go back 6 starts for him. So over his previous 6 starts, here's the game log in terms of chase rate. And again, just to remind you, on Tuesday against the Padres, 34%. So I'm going to go backwards from that. 25%, 27%, 21%, 36%. So there's the high water mark. 22%, 28%. So not getting a lot of chases on pitches out of the zone. And Ray pretty consistently does not pitch with great control. So if he's not getting the chases, then he's getting a lot of walks and he's being very inefficient. And so this is all a way of just getting around to trying to put this Padres start in some perspective. So facing a team that's not particularly disciplined, that doesn't hit for contact very well relative to other teams. So even though Ray is coming off of a pair of starts where he allowed just one run and respectively against the Dodgers and Mariners, got 9 strikeouts and 7 strikeouts, right? So looks good. Looks really good. I'm not trusting him yet. I am not trusting him yet because I'm not sure that those starts, neither of those starts went as long as 6 innings. In the start against the Mariners, he did walk 4 batters. So he's doing a bit of stranding. In fact, over the last 3 starts combined, Robbie Ray has stranded every single runner he has put on base. And that, of course, excludes solo home runs. He's had 2 of those in the last 3 starts combined. So, yeah, I am just not trusting this at all from Robbie Ray. So, you know, if you're talking 15-team mixed league, you probably are going to just take the gamble. His next start is against the Braves. That's on Sunday. So, yeah, if it's a daily league, I'm benching him for that one, unless it's a pretty deep league. And looking at my other alternatives. Now, the other pitcher who did really well on Tuesday, who's had a little bit of a resurgence, is Wade LeBlanc. Now, most fantasy owners didn't get that interested in LeBlanc, except for maybe just a little period in the midseason, when he had started to build up a pretty good stretch of good performances. But sort of right around the time that people caught on to Wade LeBlanc, then his season really took a turn southward. But I was sort of intrigued by LeBlanc early on, because he was doing a good job of getting chases, something that, you know, I talked about with Robbie Ray, very important for him. He's not getting it done. So LeBlanc was getting chases. He was getting called strikes. He was getting a lot of soft contact. It was a good combination, particularly for somebody that you just weren't going to be able to count on to miss a lot of bats. So you're looking for hitters to go after bad pitches and not make hard contact. And that's precisely what Wade LeBlanc was doing when everything was clicking for him. So he had a start on Tuesday night against the Orioles. Same dilemma here. You've got a team in the Orioles that is more dangerous than the Padres, but also not particularly disciplined and not particularly noted for their contact-making skills. So here's the line for Wade LeBlanc against the Orioles. 6 scoreless innings, 6 hits, 1 walk, 4 Ks. Very nice outing. And his last 3 combined, just like Robbie Ray over his last 3 overall, pretty nice. Same deal for Wade LeBlanc. 19 innings, just 1 run allowed, 13 hits, 6 walks, 14 Ks. So that strikeout-to-walk ratio, it's a little iffy. It's not alarming. It's not terrible, but it's not great either. But an 0.62 ISO. He's LeBlanc just allowed 2 extra base hits in his last 3 starts. So in a way, it's kind of the combination he had when things were going really well. And against the Orioles, a 42% chase rate, which, again, you know, I talked about Robbie Ray with 34% relative to what he had done over several starts previous to Tuesday. 34% was really good. But Wade LeBlanc putting up a 42% chase rate, that's an eye-opener for any pitcher. So I think, you know, as with Ray, I'd certainly like to see LeBlanc have that kind of a chase rate against a more disciplined lineup. But I'm a little bit encouraged there. So I'm not looking to start either one in any sort of format, you know, coming up. But, you know, intriguing and definitely worth keeping an eye on. And as far as LeBlanc is concerned, this is awfully nice. And actually, this is something to take into consideration. His next scheduled start comes on Tuesday next week at home against the Padres. So that could line him up for 2 starts next week. So that's pretty cool. So Wade LeBlanc, maybe, again, I'm sort of reluctant to go after him. The second start is at the Angels. So again, not a bad matchup for LeBlanc. There is somebody I like a whole lot better, who is a whole lot more available, that I'm going to talk about in just a bit here. In fact, I'll talk about him next. And not just a good segue, because this is going to be another 2-star pitcher potentially next week, but he shares the same name with Wade LeBlanc. I'm talking about Wade Miley, who's been on a nice run. Here's an important difference. Wade Miley on Tuesday night pitched against Cubs. A little bit of a different situation than facing the Orioles or the Padres. So against the Cubs, Wade Miley went six innings, gave up just one run on three hits with no walks and five Ks. That is impressive. And also, like Ray and LeBlanc, he's been pitching very well of late. His last four starts, so we're going to go one start even deeper than we did with Ray or LeBlanc. Wade Miley over his last four starts, a 1.93 ERA. That's over 23 and a third innings. He has struck out 22 batters, walked only three. So that's a lot to like right there for Wade Miley. And then he would get the Cubs again next week on Monday at Wrigley Field, and then get a second start, at least potentially. It would be a second start as it lines up right now at home against the Pirates. So given my choices of Wade's, and both are pretty well available in a lot of leagues, I'd go with Miley over LeBlanc. Looks a little bit more legit. And he's getting tons of chases, which, again, I love to see. And it coincides with him throwing his cutter a lot more. And the cutter's just been a really effective pitch for Miley. It was especially effective against Cubs on Tuesday night. So I'm really, really intrigued here by Wade Miley. I do think LeBlanc maybe has he definitely has the better matchups. But Miley did it against the Cubs just on Tuesday night. So I would not say I'm 100% trusting him. I have already put in a bid for Miley in one league to use him next week. And, I would not be totally surprised if I went and started him and it didn't go as well as I hoped. It's still a relatively small sample, but at least, you know, what we're seeing there, it's against better level competition and all the indicators look really good for him. And I've got just to highlight one more pitching performance from Tuesday night, and that's Mike Minor. And he's been pretty good for a while, but whenever he's had some good stretches earlier in the season, I've really sort of dismissed it because he's very fly ball prone. He's not in a great home park for that particular trait and not missing a lot of bats, but that's changing a little bit. So against the Angels on Tuesday night, now he just went five innings, allowed two runs on three hits and a walk with seven Ks. So really, other than the seven Ks, it's a merely good pitching line for Mike Minor, but let's stretch it out now over six starts. So we've gone from three starts to four starts, now six starts with Mike Minor here. A 2.78 ERA, that's over 35 and two-thirds innings, 34 strikeouts, so close to a strikeout per inning, seven walks, that's a very nice ratio. And here's the key, 11% whiff rate for Mike Minor over those six starts. Now that's not, Robbie Ray material there, but it's not Wade LeBlanc territory either. 11% is pretty good. Nothing wrong with 11% swinging strike rate, especially over now a span of six starts. So now with that, here's the bit of caution to issue with Mike Minor. There's the double-edged sword of those fly ball tendencies. So over the 35 plus innings, I actually don't have it in front of me, but I think he's given up five home runs, which is neither terrible nor good. But he has gotten a 179 BABIP. So there is some regression coming, but Miner does profile as a pitcher, being a flyball heavy pitcher, who's probably going to do better than a 300 BABIP. Wouldn't be an upset for him to sustain a 260, 270 BABIP over several weeks. So Miner or Miley, a couple of pitchers that I'm getting increasingly intrigued by here. And then Robbie Ray, Wade LeBlanc, intrigued, but more in a scout team kind of way. So there we have it there in terms of some pitching performances from Tuesday. We've got a number of two homer hitters. JT Realmuto, he's now up to 20 home runs on the season, homered twice and walked twice against the Phillies. So there's not a whole lot that's newsworthy in that two homer game for Realmuto. But, just continues to hit homers at a much higher pace than I think probably anybody really anticipated. He's really ramped up that power skill. this season. So while he was already considered to be top four, top five catcher going into this year, just on the basis of batting average and a little bit of stolen bases to throw in there, yeah, he's a legit power hitter at the catcher position now. Plus, you know, he gives you those other things as well. A former Marlin, Marcelo Zuna, he had a two-homer game at the Nationals. He's just up to 18, so clearly that's a disappointing rate given the season that he was coming off of. But bear in mind that he's been, even with missing time, been a much, much better hitter in the second half. He is now up to 8 home runs since the All-Star break. That's over 158 plate appearances. So now that puts him on, you know, somewhere around a 30 homer pace over a full season if you prorate it. So that's very encouraging. And a 281 batting average over that period. And that goes along with a 13% strikeout rate. So that's quite a bit better than what we're used to seeing from Marcelo Zuna. Not that we expect him to be strikeout pro, but sort of average in that regard. 13%. Well, better than average for Marcelo Zuna. So it's still a relatively small sample. I don't think we can go into 2019 at this point and say, you know, Marcelo Zuna, maybe he can be a 280, 290 hitter because of a low strikeout rate. But, you know, it's definitely an encouraging development for him, and the power has definitely been there. And then rounding out our two homer hitters, Scooter Gennett, who's just been red hot. Not so much in terms of power, though. But two homers against the Pirates. He's up to 22 homers on the year. He has had a multi-hit game now in the last seven games that he has started. Now, I'm phrasing my words really carefully here because there was one game mixed in there where he did not start. I believe he came in as a pinch hitter, so he didn't have multiple hits. But over the last seven games that he has started, I believe it's the last 8 games overall, Scooter Gennett has had multiple hit games. He has now also had 3 home runs in his last 2 games played. And if we go back 19 games, he has been red hot. Now, just 4 homers, and I say just 4 because 3 have come in the last 2 games. So most of the last 19 games have been relatively bereft of extra base power. But he's hit .427 over that span. So I think we can forgive him for a little bit of a power drought, which he's clearly coming out of right now. So Scooter Gennett looking like a must-start guy. And in that same game, Adam Frazier for the Pirates against the Reds hit his 17th double of the year, which, you know, just absorb that for a second. Because for most of the season, Frazier has not been a regular. He's playing much, much more lately. Pirates are seeing what he could do, which I'm glad to see because this is somebody who has a long history in the minors and, you know, somewhat in the majors of being a line drive hitter and being able to hit for average. A little bit of speed as well. But in the second half now, he's got 120 plate appearances. So a pretty decent sample. In fact, not that much smaller than the Ozuna sample we just looked at. So 120 plate appearances in the second half. Adam Frazier is batting .352. And he has 5 home runs. Now, we're going to get to those doubles in a second. But also absorb the 5 home runs in 120 plate appearances. This is somebody who very much coming into this year profiled as a singles hitter. With the line drive power, you know, maybe some doubles, but you know, pretty much a singles hitter. So in the second half, already 5 home runs and 14 doubles. That's how he's bumped up that doubles total in a relatively small number of plate appearances. 14 doubles in 120 plate appearances. That is just ridiculous. And supporting those extra base numbers, a 50% hard contact rate in the second half. So Adam Frazier showing some power. Now, we've seen a lot of weird things in samples of 100, 120, 150 plate appearances, so I don't want to go overboard with this. You know, I think back to 2 or 3 years ago when Robbie Grossman, for I think it was like a quarter of a season, was just this monster power hitter, and then he reverted back to being Robbie Grossman that we know, who's somebody who gets on base but doesn't really do that much else. So maybe that's Adam Frazier's fate, but it's really the first time he's getting some extended playing time. So maybe there's a breakout happening here for Adam Frazier. I don't know. Pretty interesting. And definitely while he's hot, I think you got to start him in most formats. Carlos Santana, maybe a slightly disappointing season for him, but he has started to turn things around. He went 2-for-5 with a homer against the Marlins at Marlins Park on Tuesday. That was his 21st homer of the season, and four of those have come just over his last 15 games. So in that 15-game stretch, also batting .298, which is not something we're accustomed to seeing from Carlos Santana, but really been disappointing, even with, you know, what should be pretty minimal expectations for Santana in terms of batting average, really coming around last couple of weeks. So last 15 games, .298 batting average, four home runs for Carlos Santana. And one more hitter of note here, Luke Voit, he homered again. This is now three straight games for Voit with a home run for the Yankees. Homer number 8 of the season, this coming against the Athletics at Oakland Coliseum. And, you know, this is kind of interesting too. I mean, Voit certainly profiled as more of a power hitter than Adam Frazier in the minor leagues. And during limited time in the majors, in Voit's case, of course, that was with the Cardinals. But not somebody that you really figured would show the kind of power that he's shown since coming to the Yankees. But maybe the change of venues doing something good for Luke Voit. So that's something to consider. And that he's batting .300. And more so than the power hitting, that's something I could buy into with Luke Voit. Is that maybe he's not a .300 hitter, but maybe he's a .280 hitter. Because this is somebody who, like Frazier, does have a consistent history of high line drive rates. Again, mostly in the minor leagues, but it's in the limited time that we've seen Voit in the majors, it has transferred over. So, you know, if the power is legit by virtue of playing home games in Yankee Stadium, getting to go to Baltimore, Toronto, then Voit really becomes pretty intriguing. So, you know, like Frazier, not somebody that I necessarily expect to keep this going for the last 3.5 weeks of the season. But while while it's going well for him, I do think you have to consider him as an option in pretty much all but the deepest, or I'm sorry, all but the shallowest leagues. So that's all I've got in terms of a look back at Tuesday's games. I'm not going to wait so long to come back on the air here because I'll be back on Friday. I'll be giving you a look ahead to next week, a much more in-depth look at two-star pitchers going beyond Wade Miley and Wade LeBlanc. So a look ahead, plus a look back at what's happened, particularly in Thursday's games. So all of that coming your way on Friday. So look forward to seeing you then. In the meantime, enjoy Wednesday's games and Thursday's games, since I won't talk to you again until Friday. And be back in just a couple of days. So have a great one, everybody, and take care.